Blog Talk Radio.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Gore Girl here, welcome you to another Twisted Jaunt into Madness. Tonight's show is incredible, folks. Incredibly haunted, as a matter of fact. We've got Stacy McGee of Appalachian Goats Walks. He'll be joining us later on. We'll have a metaphysical mind trip for you to freak out on. We have ghosts galore this evening, guys, so grab your blankie and a package of Depends, because we don't stop until somebody wets themselves. Usually it's us. Joining me in the studio, our tech guy, Ed.
Hello, Gore Girl. How are you this fine evening?
I'm excellent, and my hair is just fine. And that hot mama of mammary glands, the cleavage.
Hey, Gigi.
I understand that the cleavage won't wear headphones because it will screw her hair up.
Yes, I was going to point that out. I noticed that during the theme song. She was not wearing her headset.
I'm like, I point over. I'm like, headphones, where are you? And she's like, yeah, screw up my hair. I'm like, what? Really?
Vanity, my name is Cleavage.
God.
I guess she's too good for headphones. I'll just take those back then.
I know. I didn't realize that was crazy. Okay.
I go through all this work making sure she has her own headset, and she doesn't even use them.
I'm ungrateful.
You are.
Apparently.
Ungrateful Cleavage.
I am ungrateful Cleavage.
I'm going to pop those fun bags. So that's right, guys. We talk about the subjects that interest us. And if you ain't on board, you end up on our menu. I'll have you cooked, sautéed, and knitted on my face. So putting all that romantical stuff aside, let's start the entertainment, shall we?
I love entertainment.
Oh, my God. Good times. Well, hey, we're not fighting people to get on. I don't know. We have weird widgets and stuff popping up, but good times. So, I don't know. I just got to start off real fast saying one movie that people have to check out, I just saw it last night. I thought I'd throw that in there real quick for you guys. It's called The Triangle with Luke Perry. Okay, I was skeptical. It's on Sci-Fi, or as they call themselves now, S-Y, because they're so cool. I'm like, no, that's kind of gay. But Sci-Fi Channel, right? So it was on last night. It was like, I don't know, 4 o'clock in the morning. I was watching this movie. And basically, it's like Luke Perry organizes like a couple of his friends. They decide to go on this fishing trip or something like that. They end up going. They end up getting sucked into the Bermuda Triangle. So they're in the Bermuda Triangle, and their stuff goes haywire. And they're like, oh, God, we got to get out of here. We got to get help. You know, no power to their boat or anything. Then all of a sudden, like, they just happen to look to their right, and there's the Queen of Scots that disappeared like 60 years ago in the Bermuda Triangle. So they're like, oh, that's odd. You know, like, how come no one's seen the ship for 60 years and where are all the people that were supposedly on it? It was like this luxury liner, you know, like all those stories you hear about the Bermuda Triangle. So they end up going on, right? And it is a lot like Ghost Ship with Julianna Margulies. But I like this movie better than Ghost Ship, because Ghost Ship just got gay with that little girl running around and the whole saving me thing. And I mean, there was some stuff that was cool, but for the most part, that movie was just gay. But seriously, The Triangle is really good. I'm not even lying. I mean, it's not as exciting as Ghost Ship with all the Hollywood drama and the Hollywood orchestra setting you up for some taut suspense, but it really actually had a decent story. And it was really, how I could classify it, it's The Shining on a ship. They had an old-time actor that had killed his family on board the ship, and he possesses Luke Perry, and Luke Perry goes around and, like, bludgeons people with a cricket mallet thingy, paddle.
How upper crusty.
He didn't
just beat him with a baseball bat. He bludgeoned them with a cricket mallet.
I was like, okay, it sounds like The Shining on a ship, but not as exciting or well done as The Shining, and not as interesting as some Hollywood blockbuster, but it was a far better ghost story than Ghost Ship. I don't know what they decided that would be good, or I don't know. That bothered me, the whole little girl thing. I was like, God, every movie does that. I'm so sick of it. But no, this one was actually kind of cool. I mean, you had your ghost. You had some weird stuff happen. My favorite part was they're standing there, and the ship hasn't had power in like 60 years. The ship's been AWOL. All the stuff's down. Everything's disintegrated. Even the captain's disintegrated. So he and, you know who else is it? That Dan Cortese guy or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he hasn't been around in a long time.
The has-been boat. It's the love boat for has-been.
Kathy Griffin is the hostess.
All of them link arms. Come on, world, there's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
And then there's someone jumping a shark in the background.
It's the fun. He's jumping a shark.
It's leather and water skis. No, that episode would be complete
without jumping the shark. Oh my God. You know, and I didn't actually know that reference until. What? Two years ago. Yeah, you told me about that 2 years ago. And I was like, oh, my God, that makes total sense. I never knew that. Amazing what you'll learn. Amazing the useless knowledge that amasses in one's brain. No, so my favorite part of this whole triangle movie was Luke Perry, or no, Dan Cortese and the captain guy are walking by in the elevators. This is like state-of-the-art 60 years ago, you know? They're like, oh, my God, you know, this was like the first place that elevators were introduced and blah, 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 blah. So they're walking by the elevators. All of a sudden, the elevator that's on, like, floor 3 starts to go, and they're like, this is weird. There's no power on the ship. How's the elevator working? So the elevator comes down, the doors open, and a cricket ball rolls out at their feet. I was like, that is awesome. That's the best part of the movie. Other than that, I don't know, it was okay. I mean, just some stuff happens and stuff. And at the end, you know, people survive, and, you know, they come out, and the whole thing at the end is whatever ship they were on, that, you know, their little fishing vessel that went into the Bermuda Triangle that got them caught up with the Queen of Scots, you know, like disappeared halfway through the movie. So they were stuck on there. So they end up getting this life raft and getting saved and stuff, a couple of them. And they're like only gone for like maybe a week at sea or something like that. And they get saved or whatever. And they're like, saying this news bulletin or something like, oh, we found these rescued people, and they said they were from this fishing vessel, which disappeared 4 years ago. So you're supposed to imagine that they were gone 4 years. Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, okay. So it was neat. It had some quirky stuff to it, but I just thought it was better than Ghost Ship. So I don't know.
I think decade they do some kind of a thing on the Triangle. I remember some
because
real
it
old
fascinates
one.
With, everybody.
I know, right. I remember in the 70s there was one with Kim Novak and I don't even remember who else.
Oh,
do you remember
my God.
That? Do you remember that? In the end scene, she's like possessed. They're taking off in a plane. They thought they all got saved and they pan to her and she's got this horrid evil face going. Yeah.
Poor Kim Novak. She's always had a horror deep face.
Oh.
No, I love her. Good times. No, she was. She was a very beautiful woman. She was one of the classic movie stars back in the day. Oh my God, no. So I had to throw that in there. Not to like throw everything off, but I just had to tell people because that was crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I'm excited. This is summer. This is freaking summer, guys. We're in the midst of it. We are at the cusp of summer. We have a whole month to go. We've got insane stuff going on. There's horror conventions and paranormal conventions and ghost hunts and ghost expeditions. And I've got tons of little side projects going on that will just bubble your brain. And, oh, God, it's going to be incredible, guys. And I hope you can catch up and come to some of the stuff that we've got going on and that we've got planned. That would be awesome. I hope to see you guys at whatever convention that we're going to next. But just amazing stuff going on, concerts and just people and the craziness everyone's got right now. It's a really kind of mellow summer, but it's really cool. There's a lot of it's sort of like this summer's a build-up for this fall. Like, this fall's going to be insane. I just have this feeling, but the summer's like a mellow, hangout, cool build-up to this insanity that's just going to, like, completely explode in everybody's faces. So I'm excited to see that. I'm very excited. Good times, good times. Well, you know what? What was it? Friday was the 24th, right?
Yeah.
Okay. This is a huge, huge thing that we have to talk about, okay? And I told you it's ghost galore tonight, guys. Friday was the 94th anniversary of the Eastland disaster. This excites the crap out of me because I'm totally a history nut. I love it. And I'm really big, especially on Chicago history, being, you know, born, raised here, stuff like that. Love Chicago history. It's bloody. It's violent. It's crazy. You won't get any more insane than some of the stuff that happened here. We had America's first serial killer, for God's sakes. So, I mean, just insane stuff going around. But the Eastland disaster is just one of those little points in Chicago history that, you know, if any city could have the most insane things happen, I think it's Chicago. Just random points in time. Nothing will happen for 10 years. All of a sudden, some tragic disaster that lives in infamy goes down. And it's always Chicago. Always going on somewhere. So, I don't know. Everybody has heard of the Eastland disaster. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, it's like, no. He's like, I hate you all. He's like, Eastland? Chicago? What? So,
I lived under a rock for years.
Well, that's because you were there when it happened, and you were, you know, the necrophilia kicked in, and you were, I mean, it was a whole thing. You want to avoid scandal, but what you did with the corpses after, we're still living this down, okay? Chicago is still living this down, all right? No, it is. It's a terrible tragedy in Chicago. It's one of my favorite things to research and look at, and I mean, it is. It's a horrific thing that happened. And, you know, if we could take it back, which we could, and it's just one of those things that's cemented in the horror of Chicago. Basically what happened, I'm going to give everybody a little summary, and we're gonna really, like, talk about this. The Eastland was basically a ship. It's SS Eastland. It was actually, like, one of the – built for speed is pretty much what they did. But as you find out, they didn't build it so properly. Basically, Western Electric has employee picnics, right? This is about 1900. You know, this is 1911. You know, Western Electric's at its height, stuff like that. So they have company picnics. It was its fifth annual company picnic. So what they decided to do was to charter 5 ships to take the employees across the lake over to, I think it was Michigan City or something. They were taking them over there for a picnic, for an all-day festival fair picnic thing, and it was their employee picnic. So they had 5 ships. Everybody was pretty much scheduled to leave between 7:30 in the morning and 8 in the morning, and the Eastland was there, and it was one of the first ships to be boarded. So the Eastland apparently had a capacity of 2,500 passengers. Unfortunately, through a lot of mistakes and just happenstance, the Eastland should have never been occupied by 2,500 people. But anyway, here it is. It's sitting on the Chicago River, which is no more than 20 feet deep. No more than 20 feet deep on a good day. So here it is. It's in the Chicago River. It's docked. It's between LaSalle and Clark Street bridges. Waiting for the passengers to board. It's about 7 o'clock in the morning. They start getting passengers. 5,000 employees and their families already showed up to be boarded on these 5 ships. So the Eastland started boarding. Well, when it started boarding, they noticed that it tilted a little bit to port side. And they were like, okay, you know, normal, you know, get the ballast system going. Let's let some water in. Let's even this out. Well, more and more people boarded. There was a band on board, you know, an orchestra, a quartet, whatever you have it. They were up on the upper deck playing and things like that. So there's a lot, large concentration of passengers there. They were dancing. Families were there. Everyone was excited. So they kept boarding the ship. Everything's fine. Then it started to lean a little bit to starboard. Okay, no big deal. This is normal. Let's just even this out. No big deal. Well, between 7 o'clock in the morning and 7:20 in the morning, 20 minutes, the ship went back, started leaning to port, kept leaning. And despite, you know, Captain, Pedersen, everybody, despite all of them, you know, trying the ballast system and trying, you know, all their sailor expertise to get it to even out, they would think they get it to even out, but it was unsteady and it would keep leaning. It went from, I think they noticed it was a 4-degree tilt Then it was a 10-degree tilt. Then somebody on the Clark Street Bridge knows it was a 20-degree tilt. Then it was a 25-degree tilt. And, I mean, the timeline is insane of what was going on with this. And they were trying to get the passengers to move to starboard side to even it out. And, you know, no one was having it. And it was slick. It was a little – it was a light rain going on that morning. So, I mean, everyone, you know, and the people don't know any better. They're on board. They're going to this family picnic. So, anyway, what ended up happening is, and it only took 5 minutes. This is, like, the fastest capsize in, like, maritime history. All of a sudden, they realized we're at a 40-degree tilt. Now we're going to a 45-degree tilt. Now we're at a 50-degree tilt. And the captain's like, that's it. We can't fix this. It's a goner. It's a goner. So they're like, okay, we need to. And at this time, they thought they could fix it. So they had a tugboat come down. Hey, yeah, tugboat will take us out. You know, we'll be fine. Take us out into to Lake Michigan. We'll be okay. Well, then the tugboat released its line because they said, no, we got it. We got it. They thought they had the problem fixed. They started to actually move away from, you know, the gangplank was pulled. They moved away from the wharf, and all of a sudden, that's when it was like, nope, okay, we need to stop. They immediately shut down because it just kept tilting port side. And they were like, oh, God, we got to fix this. Well, within a matter of 5 minutes, there was nothing anybody could do. There was nothing that anybody's experience could do, or there was no alert. There was no life jackets released. There was no lifeboats released because there was no time. Nobody knew what was happening until it was too late. So all of a sudden, in 5 minutes, the Eastland tipped over port side, ended up laying on its side in the Chicago River. Over 800 people drowned and died. A lot of the people ended up escaping that were up on deck. They ended up being able to jump off. But you get enough bodies in that water, there's too many bodies, and people are saying, well, how could they drown in only 20 feet of water? Well, with the mass of bodies in the water and people continuously falling in the water, and the waves from when it tipped over, the waves and the crashing and pulling people under, you also forget that they didn't wear the same type of clothes we wore today. Their clothes were a lot heavier, and the women especially wore more intricate things and had more jackets and bodices and all this stuff. The weight, when they hit that water and became waterlogged, was immense. So a lot of them sunk like anchors and just drowned right there. 22 entire family genealogies were completely wiped out. Never again. Those families do not exist to this day. Everybody was wiped out. Grandparents, grandmothers, aunts, uncles, kids, wiped out. 22 entire families. Most of the crew, the sailors survived. Most of them survived because sailors know what to do when a boat capsizes. Passengers most likely do not know what to do when a boat capsizes. So, and especially the people in the lower decks drowned because the water just came in too quickly in the gangways, and they just ended up getting crushed. And by the weight of it, when it ended up tipping, they got crushed at the lowest point, so there was no way for them to get out. Firemen, policemen, people on the streets, everybody ran to the side of the boat and was trying everything to get people out and to pull people to safety. They ended up, people inside the boat, they ended up saving a few of them because what they did is hurried up and they just tore through that boat. Just, I mean, completely ripped parts of that boat off, got through the hull, the metal and all the scrap that was there, got through it and ended up pulling some of the people out, but too little, too late. I mean, the majority of them died. So I can't remember how they said it was for days, for weeks after that, they were pulling bodies out of the river. They were, you know, pulling bodies out of places. And downtown Chicago literally became a morgue. Where are you going to put 800 bodies that just died? You got to put them somewhere. So the factory across the way, throw bodies in there. Another boat, throw bodies on there. Local shops took bodies in, put them in their freezers and restaurants. Stuff like that. And, you know, stuff like that happened a lot in Chicago. We had a few of these major disasters where lots of people died immediately. And so we had to do makeshift morgues. We'd throw them in freezers and places. And it would come up later that, like, you know, gold teeth were missing. They were pickpocketed, stuff. And so the people that took these things, these shop owners that weren't making enough money, took money out of the wallet of this person or took their gold tooth. They ended up having all these trials on these people, but never any trials against the people that actually caused any of these disasters.
Go figure.
So just crazy, right? And I mean, Chicago was just in shock. The country was in shock. You know, this was the worst, and I think it is still the worst internal maritime disaster in history. Well, what ended up happening, you know, they get all the bodies, they get everything out and stuff like that. And I mean, it was just a mob down there. People were in shock. Policemen were passing out. They had divers down there. Divers were pulling bodies out left, right, and sideways. One of them went insane. He was pulling so many bodies out, bodies of kids, bodies of babies, and just ended up going nuts. And they had to, like, you know, restrain him and stuff like that. God, the pictures are amazing, though. Mm-hmm. You see these pictures from back then. And, man, pictures and reporters back then were so much more worth their salt than pictures and reporters today. I mean, today it's like we get fluff photos. We get, oh, this happened, but we can't show you this, you know?
Yeah.
Back then, they, I mean, I'm looking at the pictures, and they're literally showing you pulling this woman's body, her corpse, out of this. They show this cop holding a dead baby carcass, and he's carrying it off the ship. They show this one cop's got a waterlogged teddy bear. I mean, just crazy-looking photos, you know, all the, you know, the captain standing on top of the hull, some of the sailors on top of the hull, the chief engineer up on top of the hull, you know, cops up there, and they're all just, I mean, just crisp and clear and just, oh, God, you could feel it through these pictures. It's just insane. So this all gets cleaned up. The Eastland gets, you know, pulled back over by tugboats and stuff. They get it righted, and they end up selling it and end up becoming scrap metal, and they ended up using it and rebuilding it into the, was it the USS Wilmette or something? They end up building it into another kind of ship, a ship that actually was one of the first ones to shoot a German U-boat. So kind of cool. So basically they sold it, scrapped it. It was goodbye, you're done kind of thing. Like, okay, can't have this happen again. But there were so many problems with the boat. So many damn problems. I mean, the ballast system was completely wrong. I mean, I'm not even going to go through all of it, but there's just so many things that were wrong with the ship. It was not built correctly, even for people. Even for, I mean, it wasn't even supposed to be, you know, any of that. Even for loads, random everyday freight loads, this ship was not built right. And, I mean, it almost capsized three or four times before this happened. So they were like, hello, this boat is not built correctly. And it was a sort of passenger boat. It was the first one built by this company that always builds freighters. And they always build freighters. They were commissioned to build this passenger boat, of which they have no experience. So they build it. It's top heavy. What do they do instead of fixing it? They add more weight to it. They add concrete. They do renovations. They add another deck. It's like, what? Okay, that's cool. So it's top heavy to begin with. You almost sunk it three times, but you're going to go ahead and add more shit to the top. Oh, okay, go for it. That sounds right. I don't know. So I find it amazing. I find it amazing. So I don't know. Just crazy stuff like that, but that's not, why are you giving me that look, cleavage?
What?
You're giving me this look like, what? Jump in any time, God. You look horrified. It didn't happen now. It happened 94 years ago.
Yeah, I did hear about this, though. I just wasn't sure the name of the boat, but I did hear about it, though.
It's huge. It's a huge piece of Chicago history. It goes with, you know, the Iroquois Theater burning down. It goes with, you know, I mean, just some of the mass massacres have happened in Chicago, you know, when the Indians slaughtered all groups up there before Chicago became Chicago.
Was that Fort Dearborn?
Yeah. Massacre. I mean, just all this crazy stuff that happened. But the most interesting thing is the people of the Eastland are not gone.
No, they're not.
Oh, no, they're not. Oh, no, they're not. Some people actually say that they'll walk by the south bank of the Chicago River, and they say that they'll still see hats. They'll see hats floating in the water.
Oh, I never heard
of
that.
People
that's
that
cool.
Haven't survived or were unable to escape, they'll see hats. You know, obviously I heard the whole thing of people walking by and they hear screams. They hear, you know, they hear like what sounds like a bunch of people, like, you know, just screaming and yelling and, you know, and they look over there and there's nobody there. Then they've said that they've taken ghost tours down there and people have gone down there and they've seen ghosts walking around or they've encounter somebody that doesn't look like they should be there, and then that person's gone, you know? I mean, just stuff like that. But, God, I mean, that goes further into it. Like the Fort Dearborn Massacre, they still say they see troops walking down the middle of Michigan Avenue at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning. Shop owners and stuff or, you know, people that are just randomly there will look out and be like, what the hell is that? And it's a random troop from Fort Dearborn. They say he looks confused, and he's looking around, and, you know, dressed like that with a weapon, looks around like, what? What's going on, you know? And then vanishes like a minute later. So, I mean, Chicago's full of spooks. That's one reason why I love it. Best thing, though, is one of my least favorite things about Chicago, Oprah. Anyway, I know. I'm going to get letters from Oprah fanatics. I don't know what it is about Oprah, okay?
Oprah's going to call you.
No, I let her call me. I avoided her three times. I'm going to avoid her forever. I was supposed to be an intern when I first got out of high school. I was supposed to be an intern on her show, and then I passed that up. Went off to college, came back. She wanted me to intern again on her show. Passed that up again. Then there was a third time that internship came by. I'm like, no. I don't want to work for your show. I dislike you greatly because she's such a hypocrite. She is. That is my thing. I respect that she came from nothing and she made herself this huge mogul. I respect that totally. I respect she's a self-made woman. She's a businesswoman. I respect what she did for Chicago as far as, you know, giving us more hype, getting us on the map, getting us respect. I respect what she did as far as, you know, I mean, her charity work and stuff that she does like that. But I'm just going to say it. The woman's racist. The woman is a racist.
Ooh.
I'm saying it. I don't care what she says. Like, I mean, and you know what? This cracks me up because racism is not a one-way street. Anybody can be racist, you know? It's not like a white-black thing. It's a Hispanic. It's a, you know, an Asian. It's, you know, what if a black guy hates an Asian? That's racism, you know? If he hates him just because he's Asian, that's racism, you know? It's not just one-way street. So instead, it can turn the other way where you could be racist towards a white person, you know? I mean, it goes any way, you know? There's not a one-way street here. So I'm not behind it. I don't support it. She gets on these shows, and she gets these people on, and, like, well, first of all, she doesn't let anybody talk. She cuts everybody off anyway. And, like, she'll bring these families on that have had this tragedy happen, and they're, like, crying, and they're, like, falling apart in her chair. And, like, you know, she'll just be like, yeah, so have this happen. And then they'll start telling her. So anyway, my new book is out. And then this one book came out, and I did this. So, yeah, what happened? Your daughter died? What? I mean, I'm like, what? She treats people like crap. I'm like, oh, my God. And I've noticed she is so racist towards white people. I was like, oh, my God. I can't believe, could you imagine if I would have been an intern on the show? I can only imagine what would have happened to my ass. She would have killed me. I don't know. So I don't care. I don't care. Let the powers that be come and find me. Let Harpo Studios come track me down with a harpoon gun. I don't care. Because you know what? I'm going to say it. I don't buy her BS. I'm not behind this Oprah is God thing. I think I respect her for what she did. But when you treat people like crap and you're our general a-hole, I'm calling you out. I'm busting the guts. And now I'm busting the guts on Oprah. Bitch, listen up. You want to come on my show and try to dissuade this? That's fine. But you know what? I don't care. I do not care. I will shout it to the rooftops, baby. That's it. Down with Oprah. Woo! Soccer moms across America have just turned my show off. Now they're creating picket signs and little things. Down with Gore Girl. Death to Gore Girl. You know, whatever. I mean,
but those are normal fan mail threats. Those are the fan
mails.
Those are good fan mails we get.
That's why I'm like, you know what? Oh, seriously, get off the Oprah bandwagon, okay? And the woman is just, I don't know. Just when you treat people like crap, I have no respect for you at all. So if she would maybe, like, go back to being a normal person, if she ever was, I don't know. I don't remember. She started in 84, for God's sakes. I was one. So I don't remember how she was when she first started out. But, I mean, I would hope she started out decent because sure as hell ain't decent now. Oh, what do you got to say? No, oh, my gosh, you're an Oprah fan, Cleavage?
No, I don't get how, I mean, anything that people hear on the Oprah show, or Oprah recommends a book, it's gospel because Oprah has uttered it out of her lips. I just think it's ridiculous that people are such sheeple being led around by her. I mean, really, she interviews people on a talk show. Really? That makes her God? And you know, I have the whole thing about personal responsibility and sheeple. It's like people like look for that leader. And yeah, just because Oprah says something doesn't make it gospel.
She's not God. I don't know. I'm making t-shirts now.
Oprah,
you know, that would be
God.
An ultimate celebrity death match. Gore Girl versus Oprah. That would be the best celebrity death match to ever happen.
We'll start selling tickets at $500 a piece.
Bring it on! Bring it on, Oprah, bring it on! So, I don't know, I don't know. But anyway,
that's what bothers me about her, is that just that these people just, like, worship her like they do. That's what I find disturbing about her.
Because people can't think for themselves. And, I mean, right. I have no respect for anybody that supports somebody that treats people like crap.
Right.
So, I mean,
well,
there you
they
go.
They're probably supported because they're the ones that treat everyone like crap.
Exactly. So it's like, hello, you're out.
Oprah treats people like crap. We could do it, too.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Good. Oprah said that I should, like, murder this family and commit genocide.
You know what would be funny? If Oprah says something like, worship the devil, he is good.
Everyone would. And I have the ultimate celebrity death match. Manson against Oprah.
Which is the bigger cult leader? Oh, my God. Here's Manson would probably get scared and run away. He'd probably be like, okay, this is too whacked out even for me, man.
Yeah,
he'd be writing a song, you know, he writes those damn folk songs. He'd be writing a song, I've met the devil, and her name is Oprah. Yeah. And I could just see her, and like tagging him with claws. Ugh, disaster itself. Forget the Eastland disaster, that's more of a disaster, I think. Seriously, and I'm not to get off on this whole tangent of Oprah, but no, the reason I was leading into that is because, okay, Harpo Studios, which she, you know, runs with an iron fist, that was the site where the morgue was, the makeshift morgue that was across the way from the Eastland disaster. So they say that, you know, I mean, we've heard the stories about Harpo Studios.
Right.
Besides Oprah's tyranny, we've heard the stories about the ghosts, the gray lady that people say they see. All the workers at Harpo Studios talk constantly about how haunted that place is. Yeah. Doors will slam. Sounds like in the main lobby, like a big, huge crowd of shuffling people, like running through the lobby real fast. There's nobody there. You know, they hear moans and screams, and they hear cries of help. You know, they hear women, you know, asking them to help them. I mean, you know, things are moved, you know, stuff slamming. I mean, and especially the gray lady. She's, I think, the biggest story that they have is she walks around everywhere. She appears here, there, other. I'm like, oh, okay, good times. So Harpo Studios is extremely haunted, and that's the site where the morgue was. I mean, it was literally 5 feet from where this disaster took place. So.
What was it at the time? Wasn't it some army bunker or something at the time, or a U.S.
It was there was a random building. It was Rhine and Bex or something like that. I don't know.
I
kept
thinking it had something to do with the military or some bunker.
No, the military came in and they did. They built like their little armory thing, and they the military actually came in and took over the cleanup of the disaster. You're going to kill me now with this name thing of this building.
But
no, it is. Damn. Actually, I don't even think I printed it off. I think it's on the website. But you go to eastlanddisaster.org, and there's tons of crap on there. About. I mean, it's the Eastland Disaster Historical Site.
Wow.
It's crazy. They have personal artifacts. They have, they put on every year at the time of the disaster. They do a big commemorative ceremony and stuff. They, you know, have, you know, police, firemen, Coast Guard. They have everybody putting reefs into the river. Oh, it's just insane. I want to go next year because it's the 95th anniversary, you know. So I want to go next year. But, wow, just, I mean, the stuff they have and they do, they have actual official, you know, because random citizens started helping out, and you know, the police had helped out, and all these things that started helping out. They made special sheriff stars with the Eastland sunk in the middle of them, and it says, you know, in memory of your service and whatever, 1915.
Wow.
Oh my God, just insane stuff that they have. I mean, they have, you know, sheet music from it, and they have personal belongings from it, and just all sorts of stuff. Just
wow.
Crazy. Songs have been made about the Eastland, you know, completely sinking and capsizing and all those people murdered. It's truly a haunted site. I mean, ghost tours go through there all the time because think about it, a mass tragedy like that, the death total being the way it was, wow. And you know what? What was cool, if you go to that Eastland site, they got so many cool things on there. They got like a timeline of like the each minute or, you know, each you know, significant, important thing. They have, like, what happened, who opened this gateway, who let this go,
wow,
who did this. I mean, oh, precise. It's awesome. They also have this thing where they match the Eastland versus the Titanic.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. It was crazy. And you know what's funny? I think it was more people died in the Eastland than they did Titanic. It was crazy. It was like this whole crazy thing. Or like more the ratios or something, more men to women and crap like that. Where was it? I mean, obviously, the Titanic was way bigger. But, okay, Titanic was built in 1911, Eastland 1903. The Titanic was like $7.5 million. Eastland was only $300,000. Length alone, the Eastland was not built correctly, mind you, but the Eastland alone was 269 feet long. Titanic was 882 feet. I mean, just stuff like that, the beam, the draft. I mean, it goes on and on to horsepower and this and that, how many decks they had. Titanic had 9 decks. The Eastland had 4. You know, just goes on and on, how many boilers they had, how big the boilers were, just compares it down the line. And it's just, it's crazy. Date and time of disaster, you know, July 24th, 1915, 7:30 a.m., you know, and April 15th, 1912, you know, 2:20 a.m., you know, just crazy stuff like that. Ticket prices, this will crack me up. Ticket price on the Eastland was 75 cents for an adult. It was 35 cents for children ages 5 to 12, under 5, it's free. Titanic, only one price, it was
$4,350. Are you kidding?
If I had a choice at the time, I'd be like, $4,350 or 75 cents. Oh, 75 cents, I can go buy beer at the pub. Yeah. You get more beer with your money.
Well, I wonder what those steerage people paid, because not everyone paid $4,000 on a Titanic.
Who knows? I don't know.
I'm interested in that now. You've got my curiosity.
I was like, that's odd. Oh, and then I was kind of laughing at this. Because, I mean, some of the stuff is real similar. You're like, wow, that's so eerie that they compared them. And some of the stuff is just so vastly different that you kind of laugh. It was like distance to safety, the Eastland, 20 feet to wharf. And then it was like the Titanic, 450 miles. And you found like, only 450? And paddle in an hour.
Swim that? What's your problem
with you?
Water's not that cold.
God, we're all sitting there, wussies. Come on.
Oh, your lips are blue. Stop whining.
Oh, then I was laughing because there was, after the Titanic, they passed a law that there had to be so many lifeboats and so many life things.
Right.
Per passenger, couldn't be per boat anymore. Had to be per capacity of passenger. So I think a month before the Eastland actually capsized, they passed this law, so they had to put more lifeboats on, which dragged the weight of the Eastland down more. The Eastland ended up having 37 life rafts and 12 lifeboats hanging off its side. That's like, I think they said it was like 14 tons added to it. And the Titanic only had 4 life rafts.
I thought it was something
like, oh, my God. I was like, that's crazy. Here's the Titanic, which is like 4 times the size of the Eastland. They had 4 life rafts. Here's the Eastland. Can you imagine like this tiny little like midget boat, and there's like a bunch of stuff hanging off of it? I'm like,
and
oh, my God.
Like a quarter of a mile. We can do it.
Right on me for 75 cents. It's like, oh, my God, it looks like it's having a hernia. I don't know what's happening there. It was crazy. I mean, obviously more of the crew of the Titanic died. There was only, like, I think they said only 3 people died crew-wise on the Titanic. But you know what's funny? There was, they go crazy. They get it percentage-wise and everything. Okay, there's only 3 crew members that died on the Eastland. There was, like, the majority of deaths of the Titanic was the crew. So I'm kind of laughing. I'm like, so here's the whole crew's dead on the Titanic. And here on the Eastland, the crew's, like, climbing up the hull. They tell these stories of, like, the crew was, like, grabbing this, and they were climbing up, and all the people are dying. So here's the crew of the Eastland. I'm like, oh, crap, I guess we should have told them how to save themselves. There's the Titanic. You go ahead. You get on this boat. And here's the Eastland. Screw you, bitches. I'm going to see the sun.
Suckers.
I know. And I looked at the pictures to see the captain stand on the boat. And I'm like, does he look like upset? Does he look like, wow, 800 people died. It's kind of my fault. What do I do? He stand up on the boat, just stand there like, Yeah.
Hmm.
How am I gonna explain this one away? And I'm like, oh God.
Maybe he was thinking, I'm drunk. How do I get out of this?
You're thinking the same thing. I was like, oh my God, he was wasted. Because right before he got on to do his duty, he was eating breakfast. I'm like, oh my God, back then breakfast was Jack Daniels. Come on.
And just that they couldn't get the balance right. You know, it kept leaning to one side. They're drunk. They're like. Yeah,
right. Those rocks swaying.
Like, maybe.
They didn't even turn the balance on. It's really the whole crew's drunk. They're leaning up against the side of the boat, sleeping. And they're like, come on, straighten it out. But they couldn't. They're just leaning on the boat. Like,
oh,
a tilt the world. Everybody, go this way. Everybody! Cha-cha! Oh, my God. Then they try to get people are dancing at the deck, and they're trying to, like, okay, can we all dance this way? And everyone's like, no, screw you. And the boat's, like, leaning. How are you dancing when the boat is like this? You're like, oh, this is a new one. This is a new move.
No, it's hydraulics.
I call this one, I'm about to fall on my ass and crack my head open. How do you like it? Did it look good? Dick Clark, baby, Dick Clark.
Oh, God.
Oh, what was cool, though, is they had all these damn life rafts. Well, none of them ever were executed because no one knew what was happening until they were already in the water. So what was cool, they said, was there's a 6-year-old kid, and the life raft, when the life raft's like, I don't know what happened, the line split, and the life raft went flying in the air and ended up flying in the water. This little 6-year-old kid, I don't know where his family was or what was going on. He, like, climbs. He had more sense than the 800 people that died. He climbs over the hull, shimmies his way off, jumps in the life raft, and just, like, floats over to the wharf. I'm like, you go, kid. This is a 6-year-old kid. He's, like, shimmying off the hull and doing all this crazy sailor stuff. I'm like, okay. He's like, Stewie and Family Guy.
And you know why he's able to do that? Because his parents told him to climb on trees.
Exactly.
But, like, this day, he's like, don't climb that tree. Because if a boat were ever sink, you can't climb up it.
Why the deuce are you people not joining me in the raft? He's yelling at his mother, Mama, I refuse to be on this infernal machine going over to this stupid Western Electric Company picnic. I refuse to. Who the deuce are you? Why are you pushing me out of the way? What the deuce is happening? Why is the boat falling into the river? Get out of my raft, for God's sakes. I need to climb and actually use my muscles. I just wanted to lay around in my crap all day. Now I have to actually move. Blast.
Blast.
Got some popsicles for you. Oh, God. I don't know what we're talking about. We should go to the guest, because the guest is probably like, what happened to the show? Am I on? So, no, we're going to go to commercial, guys. We'll come back. We have the guest. And then, I don't know. I guess the show. I don't know what's happening anymore. We're Family Guy in it, so I don't know.
And now, a word from our sponsors.
What do you want when you gotta eat something? It's gotta be sweet, and it's gotta be a lot, and you gotta have it now. What do you want? Knick, knack, and whip, whack, and patty, whack, and knick, and knack, and cover, whack, and cover, whack, and crack, and jack, and snack, snack. Candy coated popcorn, peanuts, and a pie. That's what you get in Cracker Jack.
Hello.
Gifts to good friends, tonight is kind of special, the beer will pour, must say something or somehow, so tonight, let it be Lord Brown. It's been so long, dear, I'm glad to see you, raise your glass, gifts to health and happiness. So tonight, let it be all the best.
When you're with good friends having good times, don't just have a beer, have a Löwenbräu. Because good friends and good times deserve the taste of a great beer. And there's really only one, Löwenbräu.
Tonight, let it be Löwenbräu.
Let it be Löwenbräu. We're actually sitting here, all three of us harmonizing, singing. Oh, gosh, is it hysterical. I seriously, Löwenbräu. That's the funniest. Is that not the best commercial ever?
It is. I thought Löwenbräu was gone.
A bunch of drunks sitting around holding each other, crying.
And it's good beer, too.
Let it be low and brown. Well, guys, I'm jumping out of my chair at how exciting this is. We have one of the coolest guys ever. I swear, I'm not even kidding. They're like, you say this all the time. No, I'm not even kidding about this time. This time, I'm serious.
This time.
No, he is just an amazing guy. He was Haunted America's 2007 Top 10 Paranormal Investigators in the United States. This guy's an astronomer. He's, into UFOs. He's, name it. He probably knows how Lowenbrau is made. The man knows everything. I don't know what's going on. He just knows it all. We love this guy. He is also has one of the top five ghost tours in America. That is not an easy feat at all. One of the top five ghost tours in America, guys. Please give it up for Stacey Allen McGree in the Appalachian Ghost Tour. You there?
Oh, hello. Hi, how are you?
I thought you heard him off. I don't know.
I'm not sure if I deserve that introduction or not, but thank you so much.
you deserve it. It's great. I was telling everybody I mean it this time. I'm like, we have an awesome guest. Wow. I mean, this is you. Your accolades are endless. Seriously, I don't think people out there realize this. You're one of the top 10 paranormal investigators in the United States. I mean, this is of gazillions now. And to have one of the top ghost tours. What is it? Every city has what, 5-6 ghost tours now. I mean, and to have consistently one of the top. Wow. I mean, that speaks volumes for you guys. So, I mean, what's going on? What's up with you?
Well, gosh, that's the pointed question, isn't it? well, let me just start by introducing myself once again to everybody. It's Stacey Allen McGee, MCGEE, Scotch-Irish descent, a little German in my family, too, and some Native American, Cherokee Indian. Have a lot of history in my background. I live in the first western frontier of the United States. In fact, I've got three different generational lines that have been here since about 1750.
No way. Wow.
Yeah. Right here in the heart of the first western frontier as designated by Congress. It was the first place that all 13 original colonies first came over the Appalachian Mountains after we signed the Declaration of Independence from Great Britain. And everybody could finally stop listening to King George II when he said, no, we don't. Yeah. Said, no, we don't go on the western side of the Appalachians because that belongs to the Cherokee. Well, when we signed the Declaration of Independence, we were packed over. A lot of people don't realize this, but we were packed over there in those 13 colonies from Maine to Florida for 185 years.
Oh, my God.
Massing people in North Carolina from who were trying to get away from the tyranny of England and get over here and start a new life and have religious freedom. So people were building up. These colonies were growing. People were getting restless. And so even before we had signed the Declaration of Independence and we had no treaties, no agreements, anything with the Cherokee, people began to follow the wilderness trail maps that were laid out by Daniel Boone and Nathaniel Gist. So they took those maps in 1750, between 1750 and 1760, back to the original 13 colonies and says, here you go. And so everybody from Maine, Florida, came to the new territory, which was a western North Carolina territory, down from Abingdon, Virginia, which is one of the gateways to the first western frontier, and over from Morgan to North Carolina, and began coming into this area. And so we have 12 different tours from Dandridge, Tennessee to Abingdon, Virginia, centered in the first western frontier of the United States in towns that are simply prolific with buildings still standing that predate the Civil War.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and these buildings, we've been doing research for 16 years as investigators going into these buildings. I've done over 200 state and federal historic sites. We're employing, everything you see on the Ghost Hunter program, like digital photography, infrared videography, electromagnetic field reconnaissance, cold and warm spot reconnaissance, and, of course, everybody's favorite, EVPs, or electronic voice phenomena. But something else that we go in and we do is, of course, dowsing. And this is a highly controversial subject these days. But
I saw something that you're actually an expert in dowsing.
Yes,
I just don't see that anymore.
well, gosh, is yeah, dowsing was completely a lost art. I mean, it was down to the point where all that you ever saw anybody go do douse for was water. And so it turns out, you know, after a lot of research and study on this, we now teach a class, an absolutely top-notch class on dowsing and ghost hunting certification. It's actually an afterlife, a total afterlife research study certification
really?
Program.
You have an entire
yes.
program for dowsing. Oh, my God.
Yes. Using dowsing not only to find water, but also to find lost objects. I mean, we really keep it fun and interesting. We'll take a scarf and or a set of keys with our students, with over 1,800 graduates in this program from Alaska to Florida in North America alone over the last 3 years. And we'll send them, we'll put you up in a haunted bed and breakfast here in the area and take you through 10 hours of class time and 5 hours of field credit time. And at the end of the course, you get a gold and silver foil certificate that you can frame and hang on the wall and show all your friends and family. We call it our Ghost Hunter Weekend Getaway.
That really is like the ideal vacation for every ghost hunter. We're sitting here, all three of us are sitting here with our mouths hanging open. When can we go? Let's sign up now.
I have literally, it is completely life-transforming class. I have literally had the most skeptical people, usually, you know, sorry all you guys out there that might be listening, but, you know, present company accepted, of course, if you're listening to the show, obviously you're interested, but usually men who are would rather be golfing, you know, they drug into the class by their wives.
The lowest crowd.
And we do a lot of honeymoon couples, a lot of birthdays, weddings, and anniversaries, great birthday party, you know, or a birthday gift idea for somebody it's really hard to buy for that maybe has everything and maybe, you know, send them to school to be a ghost hunter. But this is not just what you see or read on the internet. This is not what you can watch on television and, you know, watching a program on television and going out and doing ghost hunting is a lot like watching ER and thinking you're going to get brain surgery.
I say that
with all diplomacy, you know. But you have to be careful with this because there's a great many things out there that is not human, that's not out for the best interest of the human race.
Exactly.
And, when we go into these buildings, you know, we never go in to thrill seek or be scared or to be frightened or to have things fly across the room at us because, you know, in quantum physics we learn that what you hold in your mind is the type of experience that you will draw to yourself. So if you go in expecting those things to happen, well, guess what? You're probably going to draw that type of experience to you. And so we teach in this class how to keep your experience a very positive one, you know, how to do an affirmation and make sure your intentions are in check and say that you're a powerful, positive seeker of goodness. And by using dowsing in a way that to help the property owners and, oh, yes, help the property owners and help those in the unseen world achieve a new level of peace and love and tranquility and joy for their own lives in the hereafter.
You really cover everything. I mean, that's exactly what a ghost hunter wants to know, and you are really cutting out all that side stuff. And like you just made your ER analogy, you are literally taking people that, you know, are following bad examples or wrong examples, and you're showing them, no, here's the safe, the right, the, you know, a nice way to do it without causing a whole heap of trouble to come down upon you and everybody else. Wow.
Yeah, and you have to remember, you know, you don't have to live there. When you leave, that property owner still has to be there. So, you know, you never want to go into, you know, provoke or profane or to intimidate the ghost into doing something because, you know, that is so wrong in so many ways I can't even say. But
if the ghost doesn't go in and decide to start swearing at the ghost to try to provoke them to come out, I'm like, really? Really, like, it's no different than talking to people. Like, really, if you
went to
a supermarket and started to say, F you, da, da, you're not going to get a reaction, and it's probably going to be a negative reaction. So,
and that's why people get these wonderful EVPs that say, get out, or you're going to die, you know? And once I stop laughing when I hit the play button on these folks, you know, no offense intended, everybody, but if you've got EVPs like this and you've been really excited by these EVPs, let me just say, you might want to reevaluate your interpretation of that because, you know, In all common
it
sense.
It may not be the same thing you think it is.
Please don't let me offend any of you guys. Let me just say that if you're getting things like this, you might want to reevaluate what you're doing and say, okay, what are we doing wrong to make these people so mad that they are saying things like this to us? If indeed it is a legitimate EVP, and I'm not doubting that it would be, I'm just saying that, you know, if that be the case, then, you know, I used to wonder if we were doing something wrong because, really and truly, we did not get EVPs like that. In fact, we got less EVPs than most people in the country were getting at the time when we first started this over 16 years ago. And, yes, we have been around longer than the plumbers have been popular on sci-fi. I know some of you guys like the show. But
that's okay.
But
none of the three of us.
I'm a fan of the show for one reason, and that is that it has helped to popularize a subject that has otherwise been swept under the rug for a great many years. But in all fairness, I didn't start out doing ghosts, actually. I started out doing UFOs and alien abduction, as you guys talked about earlier.
That's really interesting that you, like, I mean, I didn't even know. I knew you were into the ghost hunting and you had, you know, your centers and stuff. And I'm like, wait, what? UFO? And you received, you know, recognition and awards from planetariums for your work as an astronomer. I mean, that's incredible.
Oh, and I've had colleagues in the UFO field for years that have looked at me and they've wrote me wonderful glowing letters of reference and recommendation, and they say, boy, you have a story to tell. You should write a book. And I was like, who has time to write a book? And my life is an X-Files. Everybody calls me Mulder. In fact, as a historical irony about the organization, we did start with the very first season premiere of the X-Files in February of 94, when we founded the United States UFO Information Research Center. And that year we had a hotline set up during the first season premiere that went region-wide here. Eventually the organization became global, and we were recognized in 15 countries worldwide with thousands of members, even in Australia. And through those years, you know, we're and I'm so excited because, and this is the big thing I've been trying to build up to, after 16 years of waiting and building up to this, next year, on the summer solstice, the longest day of light of the year, June 21st of 2010, we're going to be opening up in Tennessee's oldest town, Jonesboro, founded in 1779.
Oh, my gosh. I have chills. I'm talking.
We are opening up a museum for UFO and paranormal research. It's called the UFO Paranormal Mysteries Museum. In downtown Jonesboro, and it will be a museum to showcase the 16 years of Southern Appalachian regional research that we have done in alien abduction encounters with alien beings that have been told to us by credible witnesses whose testimony would otherwise put a man in jail for the rest of his life. Very credible people. We're going to be having storyboards to depict these encounters that you can walk through at your, you know, either a self-guided or a guided tour through the museum to really paint the picture for you. We're going to have life-size creatures, one of which is the Cherokee Bigfoot, based on the Cherokee legend. And the Cherokee knew about Bigfoot in this area 500 years before the white man ever arrived, and no one has ever done a study of this before.
Oh, my gosh. This is just amazing. I'm serious. All three of us are sitting here absolutely speechless. Like, you keep feeding us, and we're just like, more.
So here's another big treat for everybody. Well, treat, pun intended, I suppose. But we're opening up a cafe and a souvenir shop for Appalachian Ghost Walks where you can get your hoodies, you know, your souvenirs, your T-shirts, your keychains, your coffee mugs, all those wonderful things when you come and take our 12 tours. And you can spend a whole 9-day vacation with us here doing whitewater rafting and caving and visiting museums and haunted, both haunted and historic, going to do gem mining, biking down the Virginia Creeper Trail, anything that you want to do in combination with our tours, and stay at a haunted bed and breakfast, all at a discount.
We're sold. We're going now.
place called the Afterlife Cafe. We have one motto. Our menu is just to die for.
This is incredible. I people should be blowing up your phone right now. Everybody out there, call, make arrangements, do what you got to do, sell your kidney, get the money. This is amazing. This is like one of those once in a lifetime things, you know, everybody talks about doing and they never get to do it.
I don't need my left lung. I'm out.
I had a woman, Mr. Moneybags from Maryland, of the family with three children, called me up. He was hysterical because his family suddenly got 2 weeks vacation. They didn't have a clue where they were going. And he calls me up right on a whim, 2 weeks before he wants to come down here from Maryland, and he says, "Hey, we're desperate. I know this is last minute, but we're looking at three destinations for a vacation, and we're considering you guys." I said, "Well, what were the other two besides haunted, Appalachian Ghost Walks haunted vacations?" And he said, "Well, it was Disney World or Williamsburg, Virginia." Oh my God.
Wow.
So we've got people comparing us to Disney World now. So it's truly, you can actually do this at a third the cost for your family that it takes to go to Disney World. And the great thing about our tours is they're not designed to scare you. They do not capitalize on fear or sensationalize fear. In fact,
it's education,
great,
right?
It's history, real history, and real ghosts. It's not uncommon for our guests to be touched by an unseen hand. None of this is fictitious or staged or made up, by the way, guys. Hear voices over your shoulders, be touched, on the arm, the leg, or the shoulder with no one nearby to take or accept responsibility for the incident. I've had people, complete skeptics, go away with what we call a paradigm shift with the Alternate Reality Center. This is the organization that studies all manner of the paranormal that I founded. It's called the ARC. And that name actually came to me in a waking dream at a conference called Journeys Beyond in Mobile, Alabama, several years ago, when I had come to be a guest speaker about UFOs. And I was waking up on the last day of the conference, and I had a voice in my head say, "Alternate Realities Conference." And I said right back to it, "Alternate Realities Center," in my own voice, while I'm yet still asleep in that state between consciousness and sleep. And then I sat straight up in the bed when I woke straight up, and I said, "The ARC." And the ARC, is...
That's very interesting to be called the ARC. I mean, in such biblical reference, that parallel is astounding. Wow.
And I didn't understand at first why that I had this dream. Why the ARC? Because this is the thing that the Hebrew children carried the presence of God around in, before their... the tribes when they were walking in the desert for 40 years. And so I thought to myself, okay, I started thinking, Jesus said, "Become as this little child." So, that, and what do children do? What is special about children? I love having children on my tours from 4 to 11 years old because they see things, they hear things, faster than us adults. And Jesus said, "Become as this little child, or you shall in no wise enter into the kingdom of heaven," which he said is within you. And he said, "Behold, the kingdom of heaven is here now, and you knew it not." And, when he was crucified, the veil of the temple was rent in twain as a symbology that when he comes back, the second coming, that veil would also be rent again, but not the veil that we think. It's the veil between worlds, because he said, "My kingdom is not of this world."
Wow.
And so for us to see him coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory, that veil's got to go away. And I've always said, isn't it interesting that we're having so many more UFO sightings, so many sightings of Bigfoot, so many sightings of ghosts or encounters with the paranormal, more so than we did 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, that's for sure.
Could it possibly be that veil is going away?
Wow.
And so it's almost kind of scary in a way. It sends chills right down your back, when you start to see these things. But my work has always been to try and replace the fear that most people have of ghosts with a feeling of compassion and a new understanding for these wandering souls. And I tell people, we don't go in to talk to the whats, we go in to talk to the whos. In other words, we don't go to Whatville, we go to Whoville.
I think incredible. You're doing everything that we, you know, preach up and down that should be done, and that there's too many people out there taking advantage and, you know, cashing in, and they want the next TV show, and they want the next, you know, they want their name, you know, in lights and in Hollywood and this and that, and you are actually going, no, it's about this. Come on, guys. So,
and to top it off, the most wonderful thing about it is by coming and indulging those senses, you can go back to the time when you were a child and it was okay to see things out of the corner of your eye or to have that imaginary friend before your parents said, okay, honey, that's just your imagination. You can come and go back to your childhood and be, you know, be a child again with us and walk these districts and see wonderful things and experience wonderful things. And, you know, really open up to a part of your mind that most of us have learned to repress and push back, while all at the same time giving something back to the children of the world as we donate as a company 10% of our annual profits to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Uh-huh. So
that
what
is,
more could a person possibly will ask, you know?
I think that you're some sort of angel miracle worker come down, because everything you said is dead spot on to everything that we have always wished and hoped that a company, a ghost tour, center for research could possibly ever offer. We have to applaud you. We definitely have to give you kudos for that. You are so, I'm just going to say it, you're amazing.
I appreciate that from the bottom of my heart, but I really have to give God glory, because, you know, the Bible says if any man's work be not of God, it will come to naught, and everything I have ever done in my life has always went to squat until I did this. And I've got a little story, if we have time, to tell you guys how I got to be so comfortable with what I'm doing. There was a time in my life I tried to walk away from the paranormal.
I'll hit that at some point.
when I did that, I didn't want to do anything to damage my walk with God, and I felt very young, at a young age, I felt called to be a minister. And when I walked away from this, suddenly I felt like my life had absolutely no meaning whatsoever. And so I'm going to wax a little sincere here with you guys real quick, and I want to tell you a real quick story that will absolutely blow your minds. And those of you that follow any other path that might be listening other than Christianity to enlightenment, please let me just say this. It is not my intention to offend anyone that's listening. These are just thoughts for you to consider and do with them what you will, or do nothing with them. You know, it's up to you guys. But please don't be offended. That's not my intention. It's to share with you a personal experience that I had that had so much tremendous meaning. It was such a pivotal moment in my life. A revelation in my life of such a spiritual context that I can't even begin to overestimate this. I don't even know how to put it into words to do it justice, but I'm going to do the best I can.
We check. Go for it.
But so there was a time that, like I said, I tried to walk away from this. I had not one but two tractor-trailer accidents in 1998 where I fell asleep at the wheel and I hit a tractor-trailer on one side of the truck. Both times, 3 months apart. Both times when the police came to investigate the scene of the accident, they found me outside the car walking around without a bruise or a scratch. And my car was absolutely, completely totaled. I remembered the officers in both cases talking amongst themselves as I was in a dazed state, and just remembered overhearing this, that they said in no case had they ever investigated an accident with so much damage to the vehicle that they did not have to airlift the passengers of that vehicle to the hospital, and they usually died en route to the hospital. And they had, they found me without a bruise or a scratch.
Oh, wow.
And so I began to realize this is at a time when I was trying to walk away from the paranormal, and then on December 31st, New Year's Eve of the year 2000, I was working for American Airlines, based out of Boston. June of that year, September of that year, September the 10th of 2000, I quit American and came back to Tennessee. But I had two homes, one in Boston and one in Tennessee. And I quit American 1 year and 1 day to the day that 9/11 happened.
Oh, my.
And that flight, the flight that flew into the Trade Center, was the flight that I used to bid for as the first class flight attendant. So someone was looking out for me.
We are, can I just say that you are the first guest that we've ever had on that has simultaneously, in one conversation, made us all drop our jaws to the floor, get excited, and start crying.
Oh, my goodness.
We're all in a bundle of emotions.
Praise the Lord, that's all I can say.
Gosh. Well, first of all, you're not allowed to do anything other than the paranormal anymore because we don't want to lose you. So you're not allowed to drive tractor trailers or anything, and you're not allowed to work for airlines. You're done. You're done.
And it was just amazing to me what prompted me to get back into the paranormal.
Wow.
Because I'm really going to blow you away here. I came back home in December of that year after I had quit American to be with my family through the holidays and to make sure that the house was ready for me to move back in the spring to Tennessee. And when I went to the back door to shake out one of the rugs, this was on December 31st, New Year's Eve, it was almost midnight. I went to the back door to shake a rug out, and I'm not sure what made me look up, but there was an object as big as a football field less than 300 feet over my house. And it looked like a sky full of Christmas lights. And there was absolutely no solid shape to it. This was not anything that was made by man in any shape, form, or fashion. For 3 days, I was not right. I had to catch a bus back to my Boston that night because it was faster to travel by bus than by plane from Tennessee to Boston because you had to go from the airline that I was working for, which I still had passes for. I had to go to Dallas and then go back to Boston. So it took more time to do that than it did to just take the bus. So I was scheduled to take a bus that night, and all the way home until I got back to Boston, I realized that there was what it was. It was something missing in my life, and it was the work that I had been doing up to that point. And so I started, as soon as I got back to Boston in 2000, building our website, and we now have over 2,100 pages, once again, on the Internet, with one of the largest UFO photo galleries on the planet online. Crop circles, cow mutilations, everything.
I can't wait for this. I can't wait for the opening. You said June 21st of 2010, of next year, that this you're having the grand opening. We're coming. I hope you realize this. We're coming.
We hope to get Jonathan Frakes here because the Afterlife Cafe, for those of you that was a fan of the series Roswell, that was on a couple of years ago with the Crashdown Cafe. We patterned the Afterlife Cafe after the Crashdown.
Did you really? I'm going to be a nerd for a minute. I was a Roswell fan. Oh, my God. Jason Bear, Shiri Appleby. Oh, yeah, I was a fan. Oh, good fun. God, you're amazing. And you know what's the greatest thing? You have made my job cake tonight because I am always getting guests on that I'm like, okay, I got to ask this question and come on, lead them this way. And okay, can you talk about this? Yes, no, yes. You have answered every question I could have possibly asked you, and you have told us everything that a person should know. I mean, you're the best guest. You are an inspiration to people. I mean, you run some of the best programs I have ever heard of. And I hope you realize now that, unfortunately for you, I'm going to start stalking you now.
Well, I haven't even told you the best story of the night, though. I'm one of those annoying people that save the best story for last.
This is the shining thing that you're going out on. Give us your best story so everyone's, like, feeding for more.
You guys are going to absolutely... you're either going to love me or hate me when I tell you the story, because you'll probably, like me, you'll have big old crocodile tears in your eyes when I tell you this.
Cry, man. Come on.
but tears of joy and happiness. When I started to do professional dowsing in 2003, I've been doing this now for about 6 years in the field, perfecting the technique. I began to realize that when you start doing this, there's a side effect to it. You begin to see people in period dress. If you'd have asked me if I was a psychic 8 years ago, I'd probably laughed at you. But now I realize that when you do dowsing, it's a tool to reconnect to the psychic or the intuitive part of your mind that you lose when you're a child as you grow older. And so I can now walk into a building and I can see people in period dress appear before me, and I can describe those people in such detail that the property owner will go get a copy of the family photo album and open it to a picture of the person that I just described. And it's so detailed, it's right down to the pink polka dot dress, for example, that Aunt Mamie was wearing at the time the picture was taken. That's when the hair on the back of my neck stands up. Now, when I started to do these things, of course, I was very concerned. Scientifically speaking, I was convinced that this did have merit. The accuracy was there. This is what we teach people to do in these classes. So once you open that door, be very careful what you ask for, because you may get it. I just tell people, make certain that you want to open that door, because, like I tell people, you're only one experience away from being a believer.
Right.
And so when you start doing dowsing, amazing things start to develop, amazing connections with abilities that you've always had, you just didn't recognize it. So we bring that out in people. Well, for me, I was not ready for this, but in January 2006, I walked into one location in Rogersville, Tennessee with this dowsing, wondering if what I was doing was going to get me into trouble spiritually. And I didn't want to come to the end of my life and come out of my body and have God walk up to me and smack me in the face and say, that's not what I meant.
What's wrong with you?
Exactly. My walk with God was of utmost importance to me, and I didn't want to do anything to damage that. But at the same time, my scientific curiosity propelled me forward, because I was going into buildings sometimes not getting anything more than, are you male or female? How long ago did you pass? And how old were you when you passed? Again, what we teach our students to do with more than 85% accuracy most of the time. And if the local property owner did not know anything to go along with this, I could take this information, knowing their gender, how old they were at the time of their passing, and how long ago they passed, down to the county records offices, to the deeds offices, and the tax offices, and I could actually put a name, more times than I can count on my fingers and toes, with the people haunting these locations from the county records. Again, there's a certain chill factor that comes over a person when that happens.
That's like,
so,
that's if you get your first EP.
Well,
do you remember that?
So,
it's your first.
Oh, yes. It was an amazing experience, actually. We share with people on our oldest tour in Abingdon, founded in 1778, gateway to the America's first Western frontier. But in Rogersville, which also has many historic firsts in the state of Tennessee, the oldest courthouse, the oldest post office, the oldest Masonic lodge, founded by Andrew Jackson's law partner, John Overton. Many such details you learn historically. So for all of you history buffs out there, you will be amazed at what you learn on these tours. We spend 1 to 2 years researching a location before we ever start the first walk.
Wow.
But what happens a lot of times is we'll go in not knowing any of the history of these locations, and we'll get things so detailed that the property owner will look at me like I have three heads, which is one of my little catchphrases. And they'll say, there is no way that you could have known this before you came in here. And, you know, you knew things about this house using this technique that we teach in this class, but I'm not even told my own family. And I would look at them like they had three heads, and I would say, you've got to be kidding me. Because as a skeptic, I'm probably one of the last people in the world that should have had some of these experiences, because I am such a skeptic. You know, and so I kept getting this historical accuracy, and then something profound happened to me, and this is where the big old crocodile tears start coming. I walked into this location in Rogersville in production for that tour 3.5 years ago, and in January of 2006, and I found something I'd never before found before. I found 8 children, all under the age of 15, haunting that site. There were 6 happy and 2 unhappy children. My heart really goes out to kids, because I'm just a big old kid myself, and I really don't get concerned, children or adults, for them if they're happy. But if they're unhappy, then I do everything I can to encourage them and to inspire them to make better choices in their lives and hereafter for their own sake and for their peace and love and joy and happiness. So I asked the male spirit that I was speaking with, would you please take me over to one of these children? And he did, to a little 5 to 10 year old girl who said she was very unhappy but was happy playing with the other children. And I asked her, through these yes or no questions, do you have any loved ones here with you in this location of spirit activity to watch out for you and to look after you? And she said very sadly, no. So then my heart really went out to her, and I said, do you have any loved ones waiting for you in the lights? Boy, they know exactly what you're talking about when you say that. And she said, yes. And I said, well, I think you'd be a lot happier if you go into the light. And she said, yes. And I said, well, please consider that. And when we get through tonight, we're going to do a prayer for you and for all of these unhappy folks here. And thank you for speaking with us, and we wish you peace. During the closing prayer that night, we asked the angels of God to come down into that structure and take those unhappy children by the hand and lead and guide them to a place of perfect love and happiness and peace and joy for their own eternal salvation. What I did not voice out loud as we were gathered in hands in prayer with the property owner and my business partner, that I did not voice out loud to another living soul. With tears in my eyes, with great fervency, I said, God, I cannot continue to do this. Something snapped in my mind when I found those kids there. I kid you not. I was, again, ready to walk away from this, to lay this down, not douse anymore, because I didn't want to damage my walk with God. And I said, I cannot continue to do this unless you let me know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that this is what you want me to do with my life. I tell people, be careful what you pray for, because you may get it. And what I'm about to tell you is absolutely, as God is my witness, the absolute truth. Less than 12 hours later, I was having lunch with Dr. Nancy Acuff, who's the Sullivan County historian, and we were doing an audio recorded interview with her at a little Oriental restaurant in Kingsport, Tennessee, about the history of Bluntville, one of our tours for our Bluntville Ghost Walk. And it was so loud in that restaurant that we had to lean forward across the table just to hear each other speaking. And we, even putting our hand to the ear, it was hard for us to hear one another. So there is no way that a man on the other side of that restaurant could have overheard what we were talking about. And I was not wearing anything that would have told who I was or what I did for a living. And this man, big, tall man wearing a three-piece suit, very intimidating man who I did not know from Adam, gets up from a table across the room, and he comes over to our table, and he bends over the table, and he smacks the table. And I looked up at this man with puppy dog eyes, and I said, yes. And the man bends over, and he looks at me straight in the face, and he says, excuse me. He says, you don't know me, and I don't know you, and I don't know what you do, but I'm a minister. And God has been asking me to get up from my table and to come over here and to tell you that whatever it is you're doing, to go ahead with it.
Oh, my gosh.
You could have knocked me out of my chair with a feather.
Wow.
I just stared at this man in disbelief, and if I had to describe the look on my face, it was one of, oh, no, you didn't.
Wow. This is incredible, absolutely incredible. I can't even believe it. But you know what? You've taken us to the end of the line. You've taken us to, we're out of time.
I could go more.
Oh, God. I'm like, I want to hear more. Where are we going to go? I want to hear more. Oh, God. Absolutely amazing. As we're all wiping the tears from our eyes now, thank you. But these are just incredible stories, and you are not seeing the end of us, because we do want you to come back on the show. And if you want to, of course, we want you to come back on the show and tell us, you know, more. I mean, you just have incredible stories. You have incredible experiences, and we would love to have you on again in the future and to hear more about it. Are you game?
Well, I would love to. And anything you guys can do to let people know what a wonderful service and a vacation opportunity that we have for people that's a little different than your regular, you know, going to the amusement park type of thing, or going, you know, to a state historic site and, you know, hearing a little bit more of like a dry history, you can come here and let us bring history to life for you, and do it in a way that your children will appreciate what they have learned. I have 16-year-olds that will just come up to me and say, oh, my gosh, I lived here all my life, and I did not know what you just told me.
Oh.
And I thought they were talking about the ghosts, and I said, oh, well, you're welcome. And they said, yeah, I just didn't know anything about the town, and you were just so, you know, I was like, oh, my gosh, I was flabbergasted. You mean you're talking about the history? And I said, yes. And so, it's ironic what we end up doing sometimes. You know, my sixth grade uncle was Colonel John Tipton of the State Historic Site Tipton Haynes near Johnson City, Tennessee. And his brother, Major Jonathan Tipton, was my fifth great grandfather, who was one of the 100 over mountain men that marched down from Sycamore Shoals to the Battle of Kings Mountain in the war against the British. And I did not know any of this until I was doing research for a ghost tour in 2006, and this all came out, and my family just never talked about our history. So let me give to you a new love for genealogy, all of you guys that are listening, or history that maybe you never had before, because when you realize that when you talk about the people of the past, as we do on these tours, if you don't put a little meaning behind their lives, and you don't understand what contributions they had to history, you really don't have a substance behind, you know, all those orbs that you're getting in the pictures, the EVPs you're getting, the things like this. When you start to understand the lives of these people and you start to know who it is that's haunting these locations and why they are here, boy, does it bring history to life for each person on the tour.
Well, I just want to let you know that we are definitely coming out. We're going to try your tour out. And we're gonna do definitely get the word out, because I think everybody needs to do these haunted vacations. Everybody needs to check out the ghost hunting class, and I'm definitely down for coming out there and checking out what's going on. But give us two sites real quick that people can go check this out at before we go.
For our ghost tours and vacations, go to AppalachianGhostWalks.com, AppalachianGhostIam. Ghostwalks with an S.com. And for the organization, go to alternaterealitiescenter.com, which is A-L-T-E-R N-A-T-E and realities, plural, I-E-S, center.com. That'll take you to the organization site. But we also have a site that's established for the cafe, which you'll see on Appalachian Ghost Walks. Just click on Cafe or Museum at the top of the thing there, and it'll take you to those sites, theafterlifecafe.com and paranormalmysteriesmuseum.com. And we certainly appreciate everybody tuning in tonight. Thank you so very much. It's an honor.
We're serious. We want you to come back on in the future, because we want to hear some more stories, and we're going to grill you. We want more. So we absolutely love you over here. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. And for everybody listening out there, we will have all the links for the ghost walks and the haunted vacations and everything. We'll have everything up on the website at ggshow.com. So be sure to check that out. I'll be sending out blasts all this week to let you guys know where you can go to book your new vacation. Well, thank you. I love you, Stacey.
God bless you guys for helping us get the word out and for helping people to find out more about us. I just can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you so much, and we will definitely be in contact, because I'm telling you, I'm serious. I'm stalking you now, so I think it's possible. So, thank you so much.
It's nice to be needed.
Thank you so much, and have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, my gosh, guys, was he not incredible? I just let him go. I just let him go and talk, because I was like, that's cool. That's cool. I like that. I'm doing that. Oh, my God, that's cool. I mean, I liked it. It was awesome. Not like some guests that it's like, oh.
That was so
yeah.
Funny.
That was probably the easiest job we've had all
I was like, that was awesome. He just, like, went on. I didn't have to ask any questions. I was like, yeah, okay, well, I was going to ask that. And he answered it. Every time I had a question, he just answered it. It was like he was reading my mind. I was like, oh, this is the easiest.
Maybe
he was. You know what? We got to do this for everybody. I know we only have a few minutes left, but we absolutely have to do this for everybody. We have a Stone of the Week for you guys. We have a freaking Stone of the Week. We haven't had one in forever, and we've got one. What's the Stone of the Week, guys?
Jasper!
Woo! Let's kick this puppy off.
Petey!
Petey! That's awesome. Just randomly. You have to run. That's awesome. Our Stone of the Week, Jasper, qualities are
healing,
protection,
health,
beauty,
tissue regeneration.
Jasper is an opaque rock that comes in an assortment of colors, red, yellow, brown, green, any color. Blue is the rarest.
Ooh.
The crazy patterns in the stone come from the consolidation process of the rich sediment or volcanic ash, and jasper is highly polishable.
Its name means spotted or speckled stone and is derived from the Greek Aspis.
Jasper was a favorite gem in ancient times and is referenced in Greek, Hebrew, Assyrian, and Latin literature as another stone from the breastplate of Aaron. It is referenced often in the Bible.
Aaron's breastplate? It is listed as a mystical stone for October, a talismanic stone for Aquarius, a planetary stone for Aries, and a star stone for Virgo.
Woo! Jasper is protective. It can align all chakras and balance the yin-yang energies, basically melting one's existence. It's best used on the root chakra.
It is stabilizing and healing, and the Greeks believed that a piece of jasper would ease the pain of childbirth if tied to the laboring woman's thigh.
Ancient people thought that jasper would drive away evil spirits and protect against snake and spider bites.
Not spiders.
Spiders!
Some Native Americans believed that the stone would bring rain and protect against unseen dangers that might that in the night and used in the connection. To connect with the spirit world.
They took our job!
Red jasper is used to return negative energy to the sender, always good, and poppy jasper brings joy into one's life.
As an earth element, green jasper is used as a health talisman to promote quality sleep.
You can use brown jasper to center yourself and for grounding after magical rituals. Tip, guys, darker jaspers are better for grounding.
And to add to brown jasper, it also aids in reliving past events through regression or analysis.
Ocean jasper helps one accept responsibilities, develop patience, and helps with your breathing during meditation.
Yellow jasper destroys disease and strengthens your conscious strength, energy, luck, courage, and success.
Whee! Jasper should be cleansed in lukewarm water and left overnight, guys, in a bowl of quartz or hematite.
It reacts and is energized by the moon, so cleansing it on or near a full moon would be best so that the light can absorb into your crystal.
And the number one reason why the Eastland should have been carrying a load of mottled jasper? Because it protects against drowning! Not just what up, folks. Guys, there's tons of properties that we haven't mentioned, especially with the different colors of jasper, but that just gives us a chance to discover them all in the future, guys. At least we have a basic understanding of the various colors and some knowledge about jasper itself. So, awesome! A stone of the week. Go out and get yourself jasper. If it sounds like you need it, sounds like it'll help you with whatever you got going on in your life, do it! What? Everyone's looking at me. What?
Do it! Who can do it?
Oh, we gotta mention this. We like totally ran out of time, but I think we can do this in like a minute flat. So we're gonna try to do it.
Okay.
All right. We have a freaking ritual coming up this Friday. If we talk about it next week, it'll be too damn late. So we're gonna bring it up right now if all of you want to do a ritual to help bring some good stuff into your life. It's the Sabbath, guys. It's Lammas Ritual, August 1st, which is Saturday. So, guys, okay. Going through it real fast. We got some really cool stuff. Cleavage is going to talk. I couldn't remember your name. Cleavage is going to talk. I'm pointing to her like, what is this?
I got it.
She's going to tell us some really cool stuff about the rituals. I don't know. Let's just go into this crap. Lammas, guys, it's the first harvest festival observed during the beginning of harvest. Pagans are thankful for the food which they've been blessed. Plants are withering, but the idea is that they're also leaving seeds, which is a promise of rebirth. It's kind of out with the old, in with the new. It's time to teach what you've learned, to share the fruits of your achievements with the world. Back in the day, they used to bring a loaf of their first crop bread into church as sort of an offering to God. In Anglo-Saxon, they called it the Feast of First Fruits. It's basically a celebration of life, of rebirth, of a new, of out with the old, in with the new. Swing it, guys. Give me some. Give our people some tips on what they can do to celebrate Lammas.
A lot of it is you are actually paying homage to the oat and the barley and the wheat and everything that has been yielded through your first crop. So you utilize a lot of that in your ritual, gold candles to symbolize the sun, silver candles to symbolize the moon, which again is all, everything in Wicca is based on the circle of life and crops, and that was a large part of the rituals. Was that the rituals were done to sustain the circle of life and to yield good crops and good hunting, because that was how everybody lived back in the day.
Where the hell is this damn song at? I'm getting pissed off!
You only have 8 billion songs in that thing.
Oh my god! Our end song, guys, is like missing because apparently the computer ate it! What is this? What song was it?
Let's sing.
I know. I'm trying to keep going so that our archive picks it up. You know what, guys? It's awesome. So basically, it's the rebirth kind of process, whatnot.
Right.
So what do you think? I mean, should people write their intentions down? Should they try to burn stuff?
Well, what I usually do is there's a lot of times if I have a specific intention, I'll, you know, you and they tell you like a lot of the ritual involves, you know, using a gold cloth and really thanking the gods and the goddess for the crop that you've got and gearing up for the coming winter too, because the days are going to start getting shorter now. This is your first crop. You know, you're heading toward, you know, towards the end of your growing season. So it's also, you know, kind of buttering them up for the next growing season. You know, we know that day turns to night, night turns to day, and, you know, all the seasons change into each other. So it's, you know, recognizing and acknowledging that and kind of getting ready for, you know,
the
winter
love
coming.
Oh, God, that's awesome. I'm sorry the stamp could be here. For the love of all that's holy! For the love of Job and all of his tears! If this song would freaking work, it'd be amazing!
For the love of llamas.
For the love of llamas! Llamas? What?
Llamas?
So go out and celebrate, guys. Get yourself some Jasper. Just celebrate the Eastland disaster and remember them. It's not celebrate them. Why did I say celebrate? I'm sorry. You know, remember them. Do whatever you got to do. I don't know what's happening anymore. We're having crap everywhere, papers everywhere, total destruction. It's crazy in this damn place.
Let's sing our closing song. What song was it?
Show me the way to go home. Anyway, guys, we're out of here. This has been an insane night. We're kind of taken aback. Our guest was amazing. We absolutely love him. I'm going on one of those damn vacations. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think we're all going. We're making it a thing. So anyway, guys,
trip.
We're out of here. Whether we are busting guts or spreading the gorgasms, thanks for tuning in to the Gore Girl Variety Hour.
Bye, everybody.
Oh, dear God.
Show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. I had a little drink about an hour ago, and it's gone right to my head. No matter where I roam, on the land or the sea or the foam, you'll always hear me singing this song. Show me the way to go home. Show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. I had a little drink about an hour ago, and it's gone right to my head. No matter where I roam, land, sea, or foam, you'll always hear me singing this song. Show me the way to go home. Show me the way to go home. Tired and I wanna go to bed. This little drink about an hour ago has gone right to my ooh. No matter where I roam, the land, the sea, or the foam, you'll always hear me sing this song. Show me the way to go home. Easy now. Well, I'm gonna shut up tomorrow.